Beloved Book One. Joshu stayed with Nansen for 30 years. After his enlightenment, he lived for 30 years more in the Kuan Yin Temple. Once he said, "Smoke from the chimneys around me I see in vain. No bun or rice cake since last year have I eaten. Now thoughts of them make my mouth water. Not mindful of Buddhism, I often sigh deep sighs. None of the people of 100 houses are good. Every visitor only asks me for a cup of tea. If not given enough, he angrily leaves me." At another time, Joshu was asked, "A hair's breadth of difference, and what happens?" The master answered, "Heaven and earth are far away." The monk asked, "And when there is not a hair's breadth of difference?" "Heaven and earth are far away," Joshu replied.
Manisha, before discussing the sutras of Joshu, I have to introduce you something very modern but relating to the ancient gods. Before I call Abhirbhava and Anando, I will tell few things about lightning anything mysterious that man could not understand became a god. And lightning is very mysterious. from where it comes and to where it goes. Suddenly it appears and suddenly it is gone. And it is dangerous too. It kills people, it kills trees, it kills animals. So it must be in the hands of a certain God, a power that he throws against the enemies. In India, the god Indra has been worshipped for centuries. He is the god of lightning and clouds and rains. Even man has been sacrificed to satisfy him so that he does not destroy their crops, so he does not kill their animals, so he does not send those thunderbolt lightnings to their villages. It is out of fear all gods are born, out of fear and out of ignorance. So first something about lightning. In ancient civilizations, thousands of years before Christ, some people believed that thunder and lightning were demonstrations of the power and wrath of the gods. In Greek mythology, lightning was a weapon of Zeus, father of all the gods. In southern Africa, it is widely held that lightning is a bird. In the mythology of the American Indian, both the sun and the moon are made of lightning bolts collected by a turtle as he climbed up to heaven. In India, Indra was a storm god, wielder of the thunderbolt. In Australia, Aboriginal mythology has it that the lightning man lived at the bottom of a waterhole in the dry season, and in the wet season he rode on the tops of the thunder clouds. His voice was the thunder, and he struck down with his stone axes at the trees and the people. Associated with it is a very ancient concept of aura. It is now a scientific fact that man is also having his own energy, which is electricity. In an accident in Switzerland few years before, a woman became so electrified that even his husband will not touch her. Even her children escaped from the home, because whomsoever she will touch, he will get a great electric shock. She was brought to the hospital. just holding in her hand an electric bulb will start lighting. There was no need of any wiring or any electricity. Her body was too overfull. This energy of the body radiates near about 1 inch around the body, around every healthy body. The more radiant you are, the aura around the body becomes bigger. The more sickly you are, the aura shrinks. As the man dies, the aura disappears. And now, because of Kirlian photography, your photographs can be taken with the aura. You have seen statues, photographs, paintings of Krishna, Jesus, Buddha, you will always see an aura around their head. It was thought it is just mythology. It is not. There is an energy field around them. To indicate that energy field, all the pictures of all the gods around the world have that aura. It is very symbolic. It is not confined to the head, but certainly the ancient man had come to recognize that there is a certain kind of radiation. As the man becomes more enlightened, the area and the field of energy also becomes bigger. Anybody who enters into that area suddenly finds as if he has entered into a different climate, a different air, a different silence, a different peace. This has been the criterion to find the master. There are no visible signs how to find the master. The only way is, if you come close to a man and inside you something starts changing, flowering, blossoming, suddenly you feel as if the spring has come. The man has not done anything. The aura is invisible. But the aura can do miracles into the disciples who come close to the master. By the way, I would like to tell you that this is what in Zen is called the transmission of the lamp. Nothing is given by the master, but something is received by the disciple. Where there was darkness in the house, now there is light. Avirbhava has brought a mechanism which creates aura. You cannot see the aura, but you can bring a light bulb close to the mechanism, and suddenly the light bulb flares up. No connection. Not only no connection with the machinery, but even if you can put a hindrance, a book between the two, that will not make any difference. You cannot prevent the aura by even stone walls. It passes through without any doors. Before they bring their new addition to the museum of gods, it will be good to know something more about aura. Surrounding the physical body is a protective electromagnetic field composed of radiations formed by all the bodies of men. The aura appears as a fountain of energy, and when radiating competently, has a definite and regular shape. Auras are absorbers soaking up vibrations from everything around. The sun, moon, animals, plants, stones, and people. They develop as the consciousness develops. The word aura comes from the Greek word avra, which means breeze. It is certainly like a breeze. You cannot see it, but you can feel it. The auric fields of the astral and mental bodies extend much further from the physical body than that of the etheric body, which extends out no more than a half inch or so. The undulating flow and rhythmically simmering color of the mental and astral bodies gives the impression that they are moved by a breeze. In people, when the activity of the being is intensified, as during meditation, its energies pour through the fields of the mental, astral, and etheric bodies, increasing their size and the brilliance of their colors. Auras are often depicted as fields of flames surrounding the physical body. Now, avirbhava and anando bring your mechanism. Thank you. Manisa. Has brought these sutras Josu stayed with Nansen for 30 years. After his enlightenment he lived for 30 years more in the Kuan Yin temple. Once he said, "Smoke from the chimneys around me I see in vain." No bun or rice cake since last year have I eaten. Now thoughts of them make my mouth water. Not mindful of Buddhism, I often sigh deep sighs. None of the people of 100 houses are good. Every visitor only asks me for a cup of tea. If not given enough, he angrily leaves me. What he is saying is all symbolic. First, you have to understand that Nansen stayed with his disciple Josu 30 years. Waiting for the time when Josu completely and totally opens up and becomes a flower of spiritual splendor. What you have to note about it, that neither the master is in a hurry nor the disciple is in a hurry. Nowadays, to tell somebody that you will have to stay 30 years here, then you can hope, perhaps, it cannot be guaranteed, you may become enlightened. The world has changed in many forms. The most important form is everybody is in a hurry, not knowing for what. Everybody is running, not knowing where and why. Everybody is collecting money, power, prestige, without ever thinking what you are going to do with all this. Soon the death will knock on your doors and everything will be taken away. That which can be taken away by death is worthless to accumulate. Accumulate something that death cannot destroy. There were times when people were interested only in the immortal. That which dies is already dead. It is only a question of time, whether today or tomorrow. The body dies, the mind dies, they are no more of interest, the interest has to go deeper. If there is something in you hidden deep in your empty heart which does not die, discover it while there is time. The whole effort of a certain golden age that we have passed by and completely forgotten it. All the intelligent people were interested only in one thing, to find the eternal in you. So 30 years was not a question. Nobody counted time. The calendar was not consulted. Nobody said to the master that now I have been here for 2 years and nothing has happened. It reminds me of Junaid. He used to say to his disciples the first lesson to every new disciple. That remember this anecdote of my life. I remained with my master 12 years. 3 years he did not look at me. I will sit by his side. People will come and go, and he has hundreds of disciples, their problems. But he did not look at me. The question of being introduced and the question of asking anything was simply impossible. He behaved as if I am not there. He completely ignored me. After 3 years, for the first time, he looked at me. And just his look, and as if the first rains have come, and I was drenched in a new energy. As if I was dead up to now, suddenly his look made me alive. New doors, new dimensions opened, and for 3 years again, there was not any other gesture. But he was perfectly happy and satisfied and contented. If nothing more happens, this much is too much. After 3 more years passed, and the master touched the head of Junaid. And Junaid used to say, I felt such a serenity, such a deep silence descending over me. I became completely hollow, just filled by the grace of the Master. And this went on happening 3 years again. But he was perfectly satisfied. After 3 years, he hugged him. And the moment the master hugged him, and not even a word has passed in all these 9 years, he dissolved into the master. He became one with him. Now there was nothing more that he could imagine. 3 years more passed, and the master kissed on his third eye, and suddenly a tremendous lightning, cleansing all his being of all that was ugly, of all that was rubbish, making him completely pure, 24-karat gold. And after these 12 years, the master spoke for the first time to him that now you can go. Strange. He has not said a single word to him, and he said, now you can go. What I have done to you, try to spread it. This is transmission. The master is ready to pour down all that is splendorous. But the question is whether the disciple is ready to receive it. Buddha used to say that there may be great rain falling. You can put your pot upside down. What the rains can do? Your pot will remain empty. Your pot has to be in a position to receive the rains. These 30 years, Josu stayed with Nansen, has to be understood that it was a totally different kind of calculation about time. People were not interested in time, but were interested in the timeless. I have not come across a single incident in the whole history of consciousness and its evolution where a man was tired that so many years have past and nothing has happened. Nobody has ever complained that. It shows a very unhurried way of life. It shows that whether we know or not, we are part of eternity. If it is not happening today, it will happen tomorrow. If it is not happening tomorrow, perhaps next life. But immense possibilities are there. So don't be in a hurry. In a hurry you may miss many things which were birthed to be enjoyed, to be tasted. Go slow. Time went so slow that almost nobody was interested in time. The whole effort was to know the timeless. Today, time has become very important. People are counting minutes, people are counting hours, because they have forgotten their eternity completely. And particularly Mohammedanism, Judaism, Christianity, these three religions have been helpful in making people too much hurried, too much tense, because in 70 years so many longings and so many dreams have to be fulfilled. There is no time for anything else, and all those dreams remain unfulfilled, all those longings remain as far away as the horizon. Man runs and runs and reaches nowhere. But more and more he wants. You must have read Leo Tolstoy's famous story. How much land does a man require? Leo Tolstoy is one of the greatest men humanity has produced. And just few days before, I came to know he was not given Nobel Prize. Nobody is more worthy of Nobel Prize than Leo Tolstoy. His creativity is immense. He has not been surpassed by anyone. His name was nominated, but the prize was refused by the committee. Nobel Prize Committee opens its records for public only after 50 years. So just this year they have opened their records for public to see or for research workers to look into. And I was so shocked. In the records it is said that Leo Tolstoy cannot be given Nobel Prize because he is not an Orthodox Christian. The reason, he is Christian, but he is not Orthodox Christian. He has his own original ideas, which are not traditional. These considerations, his great book, Anna Karenina, the peace, the war and peace, they are not considered at all. The consideration is whether he is Orthodox Christian or not. Then they should make it clear that Nobel Prize is only for Orthodox Christians. Why go on being hypocrite? But these three religions have created a tremendous difficulty for humanity. They have all given the idea that you have only one life. Not knowing anything about past lives, they have given man a tremendous, speedy, hurried way of life. You have to fulfill so much that everything remains incomplete. You cannot complete anything because you are in such a hurry, another thing is waiting, lined up. People die with empty hands. All the Eastern religions, Taoism, Buddhism, Jainism, Hinduism have given a totally different dimension, the whole eternity. You are not confined into 70 years. Birth and death are simply episodes in your eternity. Many times you have been born and many times you have died. Still, the eternal principle of life continues. That has given East a certain restfulness. There is no hurry. You can sit by the side of the Master 12 years. And the Master can take his own time, 3 years, to look at you. 3 years to put his hand on you, 3 years to hug you, 3 years to touch your third eye and send a thunderbolt which transforms your whole being, and not giving you any verbal message. Junaid was simply told by the Master, now you can go. My work is complete, and whatever I have done to you, do to others. This you have to remember. Just the very remembrance that we have been here forever and we will be here forever gives a deep relaxation. There is no hurry. We can do everything as minutely, in as much detail. We can do things in perfection. After his enlightenment, he lived for 30 years more in the Kuan Yin temple, Once he said, what he is saying is very symbolic. Smoke from the chimneys around me I see in vain. He is saying that there are people, I see smoke from their chimneys, from my mountain top, but in vain, because nothing ever becomes right. Nothing ever is completely cooked. These people are absolutely aware that I am waiting here on the mountain top, and I have something precious to give them. No bun or rice cake since last year have I eaten. He does not mean bun or rice cake. What he means, since last year I have not come across a ripe man. That's what his master Nansen has told, that he is a very ripe fruit. Give him good treatment, he can fall from the tree any moment. Now thoughts of them make my mouth water. He is saying that just the thought that these people are there, carrying inside a tremendous delight, and I am sitting here ready to open up the door, but they are absolutely unaware of their own treasures, not mindful of Buddhism, naturally, when you become enlightened, you are no more interested in any ism. It may be Buddhism, it may be Jainism, it may be Taoism, it does not matter. Enlightenment takes you beyond all isms. Isms are simply philosophical statements. Enlightenment is the very experience. So he says, not mindful of Buddhism, because Buddhism will not allow what he is doing. I often sigh and deep sighs for the people who are so close to the truth, but will remain far away, because even the desire, even the quest has not arisen in them. None of the people of 100 houses are good. Just below his mountain, there were 100 houses. Not a single individual from that village has come to inquire what this monk is doing here, sitting under his tree for 30 years. They are unconcerned. It is not something new. In Pune there may be more than 20 lakhs people and none of them must have ever thought that what is going on in this place in Buddha auditorium. They may pass from the road, they may see something is going on, but no inquiry. They are so involved in the ordinary that they keep themselves completely blind about the ultimate. Every visitor only asks me for a cup of tea. And even if someone comes by the way, a stranger, he asked me for a cup of tea. I could have given him the whole world, the whole universe. But such is the poverty of the mind. He does not look at me. He simply wants a cup of tea. He is just passing by. Perhaps this monk in his temple must have tea. But this monk has something of the divine that he is not concerned. If not given enough, he angrily leaves me. Now, Josu has no obligation to provide tea for strangers, and he himself is a poor monk. He can give something which you have not even imagined in your dreams. But you are completely unaware and blind. People even become angry if he says that there is no tea. I can give you myself, I can share many other things, but tea is not there. I am a poor monk. They become angry. While you are listening to these statements and anecdotes, always remember one thing, that don't listen to them as if they are about somebody else. One line of a English poem is, "For whom the bell tolls." In a Christian village, when somebody dies, the church bell rings to inform the farmers around that somebody has died, come back. Poem says, never ask for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. It has a great insight. Whoever dies shows you one fact that you are also going to die. And before death takes you, do something to find something so that you can defeat death. At another time, Josu was asked, a hair's breadth of difference, and what happens? It is again an ancient Zen koan. A breadth's difference, and what happens? People are given this koan to meditate upon. Nothing is said that what are the things in which a breadth difference makes a great difference. A hair's breadth. People meditate on it. As they go deeper, they cannot find any intellectual answer to it. But as they go deeper, they find the answer one day. The answer is between you and your center. Just a hair's breadth of difference is a great difference. Even that much difference should not remain. You should dissolve into your center, utterly and completely. Only then you can be called a fulfilled man, an awakened man, a Buddha. The master answered, heaven and earth are far away. Zen is very special in his ways of dialogue and everything. The master answered, heaven and earth are far away. Now, this seems to be absolutely irrelevant what the man is asking. The monk asked, and when there is not a hair's breadth of difference, then what happens? And Josu said, heaven and earth are far away. The same answer to both the questions, and both the answer are absolutely irrelevant to the question. It creates a situation, and that is the whole work of a master. He is saying that you are asking a question which is not for asking, which is only available to those who enter in themselves and find it. Otherwise, heaven and earth are far apart. The man thought perhaps he can ask the question differently, but the answer remained the same. The master, without saying that you are asking irrelevant things, things which cannot be asked and answered, which can only be experienced. But this is the way Zen has developed a tremendous language of its own. Replying him with irrelevant answers, he is throwing him back again and again. Perhaps he may get the point. He does not want to say him directly that experience. There is only one thing in life where a hair's breadth will make immense difference. If you reach so close to your center, but just a hair's breadth, and heaven and earth are far apart. The distance is so much as is between the earth and the heaven. It does not matter that you have come very close. Even closeness is a distance. You cannot say, I am approximately enlightened. Even approximately enlightened, you are ignorant. Either you are enlightened or you are not enlightened. Not even a single hair's breadth will make you approximately enlightened. Just think, either you are alive or you are dead. You cannot say 50-50. Either you are awake or you are asleep. You cannot say 50-50. Josu is kind enough to have even answered such a man, because Zen is a very delicate matter, very fragile matter. It deals with the ultimate reality. You have to handle it very carefully. Tet Suan wrote, too much happens here where nothing should at all. A thetaj hut is not supposed to be a busy place, but mountain birds come to flee the evening rain in these dense woods. Clouds drip patterns of slippery moss on stone beds. This floating world is just a tune whistled on a sword hilt. Fame and fortune have forgotten all about me. Tet Suan is talking about the small hut in which Josu lived. is saying too much happens here. On this far away mountain, in a thatched hut, too much happens here where nothing should at all, because it is so far away from the world. But still so much happens. A thatched hut is not supposed to be a busy place, but it is a busy place, because to a Zen master, everything happening around, clouds and flowers and trees, have equal status with man. A thatched hut is not supposed to be a busy place, but mountain birds come. Man may not come, but mountain birds come to flee the evening rain. In these dense woods, clouds drip patterns of a slippery mass on stone beds. This floating world is just a tune whistled on a sword hilt, on fame and fortune, have forgotten all about me. That swan lived with Joseph. The world may have forgotten them, their fame and name, but few seekers find out the way, however deep in the forest a man like Joshua hides. A man of awakened soul is a great magnetic pull. Wherever somebody has an urge to search, suddenly on unknown paths, people start moving towards the master, not knowing exactly where they are going. That's how you have gathered here. There is no reason for you to be here, but something goes on keeping you here. Some immense possibility of finding the truth, of experiencing the beauty, of knowing the meaning of life. Manisha has asked a question. Beloved Bhagwan, has one only received a hit if it hurts? Manisha, A master hits not to hurt but to heal. And a disciple receives the hit with tremendous gratitude, not with anger. Unless a hit is received with gratitude, it cannot do its work of healing. And you are all full of wounds, and they all need to be exposed to the sun, to the open sky, unless you allow yourself to be exposed completely, you cannot get rid of those wounds. The normal way in the world is to hide the wounds so nobody knows them. Go on hiding them deeper and deeper into the unconscious, so even you forget them. But to work on the consciousness, to clean it from all the wounds, is absolutely necessary. Those wounds has to be brought in the open. Your asking has one only received a hit if it hurts? No, Manisha. If it hurts, you have missed. If it does not hurt but creates a gratitude, a love, it heals. Last night I did not feel hurt. You are an old sinner, Manisha. You have been with this strange man long enough, but you don't know that by your side Zarin was sitting, your migraine immediately jumped on Zarin. Today now she is sitting far away from you. For 7 years she had no migraine. Last night she suffered migraine. I sighed jumping on migraine, but I kept quiet because she is new. And she has to understand many things. This was also a great experience for her, that this is not an ordinary assembly of people. This is not a Lions Club or a Rotary Club. We are involved in the greatest experiment of transforming consciousness. If you keep remembering it, you can overcome all the stumbling blocks. And I hope that Zarin has come over the migraine. But it jumped on her because she is new and she does not know. That in a place like such, the master hits only when he loves. The master hits only when he finds you worthy enough. You are saying, I saw the truth of what you said, but did not hate myself or stop loving you. Did I miss? No, Manisha. Fortunately, you did not miss. I know you will hit me again if I need it, and this time I don't have the excuse of a migraine. Look where your migraine has gone. Now, when everybody is in meditation, Zarin has to throw it as far away as possible. Whoever deserves it will get it. And I promise you, Manisha, whether you need it or not, I will hit. Just for sheer joy. Now, today's time is devoted for Zarin. Little Arni swaggers into the bar and shouts to the shapely barmaid, give me a triple scotch on the rocks. Hey kid, says the barmaid, you don't look to be more than 7 years old. Do you want to get me into trouble or something? Maybe later, says Arni. Right now, I just want the scotch. Alfonso, the Italian, is dragging a large heavy box down the middle of the street when he suddenly stops in front of a house. He knocks on the door and a woman comes to open it. Are you Widow Jones? Asks Alfonso. My name is not Widow Jones, replies the woman. It is Mrs. Jones. Well, says Alfonso sadly, just wait till you see what I have got in this box. Old Father Fungus is getting very deaf in his advanced years. So he asks his flock to write down their sins on a piece of paper instead of speaking them to him. Everything is going well with this method until one day Father Fungus hears someone crash his way into his confessional booth, belch loudly and blow his nose. The strong smell of whiskey pours from the other side of the box as Father Fungus hears his old friend Paddy fumbling around in his pockets. Finally, Paddy passes a small crumpled scrap of paper through the curtain into the priest's hand. The confession reads, 10 cans of beer, 1 6-pack of Coca-Cola, half a dozen eggs, 3 rolls of toilet paper, 2 condoms, and 1 box of tampons. Old Father Fungus looks at the note for a minute, shrugs, and silently passes it back to Paddy. Paddy stares at the paper in shock. "Ah, Jesus," he cries, "I must have left my goddamn sins at the supermarket." Prince Charles and Princess Diana of England are invited to be the guests of honor at the All England Agricultural Show after they have presided over the opening ceremony. The royal couple dutifully walk around to mix with the farmers and look at the exhibits. Soon Charles gets bored and heads for the beer tent, and Diana walks over to admire the prize bull. And never did a male animal have such splendid equipment. The princess is shocked and amazed at the size of the beast's machinery and calls over the bull's attendant, Farmer Covilt, for a talk. "That is a fine animal you have there," says Diana. "Yes, Your Highness," replies Covilt. "He is a champion and the father of champions." "Really?" says the princess, getting excited. "Tell me about him." "Well, my lady," continues the farmer, "this bull went to stud 300 times last year." "Really?" exclaims Diana. "That is amazing. I must tell my husband about this." And she runs off to get Charles. She finds him in the beer tent, boozing with a bunch of farmers. "Come with me, Charles," snaps Diana. "I am going to show you an animal that will make you feel ashamed of yourself." And she drags him over to the bull. "Now, my good man," says Diana to Farmer Covilt, pointing to the bull's balls, "tell my husband what you told me about this bull." "Well," replies the farmer, "as I was explaining to the princes, here this magnificent bull went to stud 300 times last year, and that Charles interrupts dhyana is almost every day. Very interesting. Slurs Charles. But I bet he does not have to screw the same old cow. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards, collecting your whole consciousness. With great urgency, as if this moment is your last moment of life. Only with such urgency one can reach to the center of life. And the center of life is the center of eternal, immortal, universal being. Deeper and deeper, because you are going to meet at the boundary line between you and the oceanic consciousness, the Buddha himself. Your being a Buddha is a necessary preparation for taking another step and jumping into the cosmic whole. Not leaving even footprints in the blue sky. The greatest blissfulness is not to be. Thousands of flowers start showering on you. Just be an empty heart. And you will be filled with tremendous treasures. to make it clear, Nivedana, relax, and just remain watchful, witnessing the body, the mind. You are neither of them. You are only the witness. This witness, metaphorically, is referred as the Buddha, the awakened one. How cool it feels at the center. A fresh breeze. A new fragrance that you have never experienced. The whole consciousness becomes full of stars. This evening was beautiful in itself. But 10,000 Buddhas dissolving themselves into the ocean of consciousness have made it majestic. I can see that your consciousnesses have become a lake . The Buddha auditorium is just a lake of silent witnessing. In such lakes, lotuses blossom. Truth is experienced. Love for the first time understood. Beauty is no more a physical thing, but an inner grace. Collect as many flowers as you can before Nivedana calls you back. This is your true nature. This is your original face. You don't have to go to any temple to find the Buddha. Your witness is the Buddha. Nivedana, now come back, but come back like Buddhas, with great peace, with immense grace, with a song in the heart. With a dance in every fiber of your being and sit down for a few moments just to recollect the whole experience, where you have been, the golden path that you traveled back and forth. This path you will have to travel back and forth many, many times. Only then, one day you are right. Only then the time comes for the ultimate explosion.
Yes, Bhagwan.